Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Authors on the Air, the place where we ask that burning question, who are these word warriors? And hopefully, the place where we find the answer. I am Ann White. I am a co-host, but I am sitting in the studio by myself today because our other co-host, Pam Stack, has come down with a bug. But I think we'll be hearing from her. She will be texting me messages in case I go astray. So don't worry, she's got me under control. I wanted to share with you, too, where you can find our work. We have a website called Authors on the Air, and you can find it just as that, www.authorsontheair.com. And what you'll find there that I hope you find interesting are our blogs. As we get ready to interview guests for our program, we try to read as many of their books as we can, and then we'll blog about the books. So if you enjoy reading, if you enjoy mysteries, especially we're on a mystery kick, but we're not always going to be on a mystery kick, you'll see our blog post there. So feel free to jump in and make comments. Also, find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/authorsontheair. And we're approaching 150 likes there. So when we get to that amount, we are going to have another prize giveaway. So make sure you sign up because everybody who is a fan or a friend is eligible for free books. Okay, that's about enough of our promo. I'm excited to bring you a very special author. So let me bring Mike Farsi out. And hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Ann?
Great. And you are up in Minnesota today. Did you say overlooking the banks of the Mississippi?
Well, just about, yeah. But up here on a warm, humid day, warm for us, it's about 72. So
okay, we're in Florida. Warm for us is about 100. But Mike is a funny author, a humorous. Humorous sounds better than funny, I would guess. And he is an author of many books. I just finished Slow, Slow, Quick, Quick last night. I'll be talking about Merlot. That's one of my favorites. Russian Roulette is the first of a series with a protagonist called Dev Haskell. Mr. Softy, we have End of the Line, Finders Keepers, Chow for Now, Baby Grand, all sorts of just fun books. So let me ask you a question, Mike. When did you think that you were an author? When did you first call yourself an author?
Oh, boy. You know, it was a process. I started writing, and I actually wrote I wrote a book called Candygram, which is still under my bed. And I presented it to a local author here, a guy named Kent Kruger, who writes mysteries and has a national following, very successful. And he graciously took me to lunch and suggested that everyone writes a book that they keep under their bed and really doesn't show anyone. So I decided maybe I should go back and do a little more crafting, which I did. And it was a process. At first, you sort of tell people, you know, I'm thinking about writing a book here. And you kind of, you know, good friends, you kind of get this look, isn't that nice? So I kept it kind of quiet. And then I got a couple of books out there on the internet, e-books. And I got some good positive responses from people, really liked it. When's the next one coming out? And all of a sudden, that sort of vindicated my work and effort. And now when old-time friends see me, they always say, oh, yeah, when's the next book coming out? How are things? So, it's been a process. I just described probably 10 or 12 years right there. But right.
And even the first time you tell somebody I'm an author, you know, that's kind of a big step in our progression, for one thing.
Yeah. You get that look. Yeah, sure you are. You know, boy.
What's your first published book?
The first published one was Slow, Slow, Quick, Quick.
Oh,
the title refers to dance steps. And it's got sort of the guys involved have a dance instruction school, as you know. All my work, you know, write what you know. So all of it is certainly set in Minnesota, with the exception of that one book, which, you know, has a beginning and end in Minnesota, but most of the action is taking place down in Florida. So
right in my neck of the woods.
Wrote it in winter.
Yeah, have you ever taken dancing lessons when you say write what you know?
Not with a lot of success, you know.
So, you're still at the slow, slow, quick,
quick
part.
I'm one of those guys, it's better if I sort of watch people dancing and enjoy their capabilities and abilities rather than trying to present my own.
Now, with slow, slow, quick, quick, I loved your plotting. It's twists and turns, and you have different threads coming through, and you wove it all up nicely at the end. How did you plot that book? Where did you even come up with some of the ideas to twist and turn it the way you did? It's just delightful.
It's all real life, Anne. You know, it's just...
Yeah,
it,
well, you're not robbing people of necklaces. You know, you're writing books.
Yeah, well, you know, actually... there's a bit of the reality of someone I know who was involved in some extracurricular activities there along those lines, and so it's a little bit of a tale of him, and a lot of people are very I work very hard, and I think I'm pretty disciplined. The one thing I don't do is I don't create a draft or an outline and then work off that. So at the end of any given day, I'm just as surprised as the reader as to what has happened.
That's why it's got a terrific end, and which I will not say. But so you didn't know the end when you started, or did you have a pretty good idea about the end when you started?
No, I didn't know the end at all. Yeah, I was amazed those guys ended up in Florida. I thought they would have gone to Texas or someplace, but, you know,
yeah,
what
well,
do I know?
No, they know the best places. But,
there you go.
One of the reasons I like this book, and I think it's true for most of the books that I have read that you have written, is your bad guys are likable. And I was just thinking of that last night. I don't know how many authors, you may be the only one where you're cheering for the bad guy. So you make very likable, you're making likable bad guys.
Uh-oh. Well, isn't that the way of life, you know?
Well, yeah, maybe. You want them all to be dark or something, but it seems like you've got incredible bad guys.
Oh, what's the largest criminal class? Congress?
Yeah.
At least outside the institution, you know,
yeah.
So.
Why don't you, go ahead. I was going to ask how you got Dev started. Where did Dev come from, Dev Haskell?
He was sort of bouncing around in my empty thick skull. And if you read a couple of my other tales, particularly Chow for Now and Merlot, sort of the beginnings of Dev are there. A guy who, he's a backslapper, he's everyone's friend, hail fellow, well met, and there's just sort of this goofball aspect to him. And I started doing, kind of putting them together without really realizing I was doing that. And along with it, when I read other authors, and I probably like most writers and a lot of people, I'm a voracious reader. And when I find an author I like, I just inhale all the books that they've written. I was on a jag with reading all of Robert B. Parker's work,
yeah.
Who was very prolific,
mm-hmm.
and has a lot of tightly constructed, dialogue-driven tales. I really liked them, and one of the sort of aspects as a reader that I liked is you're constantly turning a page. I mean, there's just a lot of dialogue. There isn't a lot of wasted dialogue. In fact, none in Parker's stuff. And you're really making progress, and it's the type of book, and I always enjoy this, where you sort of want to put the coffee on at about 10 o'clock because you look at it and you say, I think I can finish it if I can stay up for another 2.5 hours. And you want to do that, or you want to hurry home from work and get to the book, you know, that type of thing. I really, and all of those came together, and suddenly Dev came out of it.
Yeah, but your Dev is not a Spencer. You have to admit, he is
he is anything but. He is anything but a Spencer. But it's a bit dialogue driven. He finds himself in situations and scenarios, and hopefully the descriptions of places and things are brief and to the point and allow the reader some leeway in painting the picture.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was thinking when I said you have very likable bad guys, your protagonist is not what you'd call a superhero then either. Devlin Haskell is not, like I say, Spencer. He's not like a superhero, but he's incredibly likable. What Pam said about him, he said he's not your well-dressed, well-heeled, fancy-pants private investigator. He has no office office phone. So that's your guy.
In my latest book, Bite Me, he has an office, but the reason he got it was I think it was a sort of a poker game, and someone lost a hand and offered him an office for 6 months, which he took, and it's not very effective. He spends a lot of time looking out the window at a bus stop because a lot of women get on the bus and are either going to work or to a local college, and he's constantly glancing at that and not accomplishing anything. Why would he? He's the type of guy that. You'd meet him. Maybe you went to high school with a guy like this, and you always like to keep tabs on what he's up to because it's going to be interesting. But you really don't want him over to the house, or you certainly wouldn't want him dating your sister or anything.
What's his love life like?
Complicated and oftentimes brief. He's a great guy. He's the type of guy that. If a woman wanted just that sort of to fantasize about that romantic, maybe a little extra wild getaway weekend where she wasn't going to ever tell her girlfriends about it, he'd be the guy she'd go with. Of course, we all know that the thing would go bad in some way, shape, or form. The car would break down or, he'd lose the key to the fantastic bed and breakfast they were going to stay in, or forget his wallet and she'd have to pay. Something like that. A lot of women are attracted to him.
He's a nice guy.
And then after a while, they just sort of get tired of the stunts and they sort of throw up their hands. He's got a couple of long-term, I'll say, girlfriends. That doesn't necessarily mean a romantic interest. It certainly, in one instance, it doesn't. But women who have stuck by him and invariably get him out of a jam. I think, and this is not by design, but all of a sudden I look back at the Dev books and, it's always a woman who is sort of pulling his feet away from the fire.
Yeah, like Heidi.
Sort of putting him in. Yeah, well, yeah. And Heidi, get some of the service that Dev can provide from time to time. But she's a highly successful, smart, very talented individual who for some reason keeps him around. And, I'm sure there are nights where she wonders what she's doing. But
she keeps him out of jail, for one thing. Isn't she the one who bails him out of jail all the time?
Posted bail more than once, and he doesn't quite get it. And he reluctantly calls her, and there's really no one else she can call, and she hangs up. And, they have a love-hate relationship.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Mike. Is the spot bar real?
Yep.
Is that his office half the time when he doesn't have an office?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it's one of those bars. And in fact, the reason I did this, I might have darkened its doorway once or twice. It is, I think unofficially, it's the oldest continually serving establishment in the city of St. Paul, which brings it back to about, I think, 1867. That includes during Prohibition when they had a sort of a basement service. It's a it's pretty much a neighborhood local place. It's really not the type of destination. All the locals go there, and in fact, one of my friends said it's become a biker bar. And I said, a biker bar? You mean motorcycles? You know, he says, everyone's gotten a DUI, and so they have to ride their bikes over there. They can't drive anymore.
So when you said that motorcycles, I'm thinking like I'm the Lance Armstrong, but no, these are the guys who are pedaling because they can't drive.
Yeah, exactly. And their wives and girlfriends, you know. The spot is a classic joint. I mean, the story is two guys are in there one day and sitting at the end of the bar. Of course, it would be, you know, broad daylight. And they're one of them staring at the front door, and he says to his pal, hey, when did a bullet hole show up in the front door? And with that, a bottle explodes behind the bar, and a second hole is in the front door, and someone had shot at the place driving past. Just it's a classic joint.
And you did a lot of your research there? Is that what you're telling us? That was for your research?
I'm sorry? You have a what?
Did you do a lot of your research there?
There's some stories there. If you look at the cover of Russian Roulette, that is actually photographed in the spot bar.
Oh,
and that is my son on the cover, and then the female hands holding the gun to his head is his now wife, then fiance. And we took that photo at 10:30 on a Sunday morning, a gorgeous Sunday, sunny, 75 degrees. The place is jammed. Everyone is having a shot and a beer. They don't serve food, and no one is on there first. And we're taking this photograph, and so she's got the gun to his head, and he says to the assembled crowd watching and sipping, he says, this is for our save the date card for our wedding. They all liked that. It's the type of place, Ann, where I could say to the bartender at that point, why don't I buy everyone around here? And I think the bill was like $26 or something, you know.
And it was crowded.
Yeah, it was crowded. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's Sunday morning. You know, all those guys for the liquid brunch.
Oh, that's right. You know, Mike, when we started, before we were on the air, you said about the time just before you were going to be a guest on someone's show, your computer got a virus and everything was a little tense. Well,
yeah.
Started the show and it was sunny in Florida. I'm in the middle of a huge thunderstorm. You can hear thunder probably coming through the line. And so, you know, if we disappear, we'll just do it again. But anyway, we'll see what happens.
If we get disconnected, I'll just continue the show on my own.
If that'll work out great. Just go ahead and have fun. Go as long as you want.
Yeah, I'll get out the bagpipes. That'll make everyone hang on.
Well, you know, let's take a little turn here with this bagpipe thing before I come back to your other books. But you're a bagpipe. Where in the world did you learn how to play bagpipes? You're from Minnesota.
No. Yeah, well, actually, there's a number of pipe bands in town up here. St. Paul is initially was a largely Irish city. Because you know, this was the frontier when the famine in Ireland was coming on, and so a lot of those people settled here. There's 4 or 5 bagpipe bands in town. I play with the Brian Boru Irish Pipe Band, and Brian Boru was a 10th century king in Ireland, and was credited with running the Danes out of Ireland. The band has always offered free lessons. I loved the bagpipes even as a little boy, and got to the point where you sort of have to fish or cut bait, and decided either I'm going to take lessons and learn or I'm going to stop talking about it. That was decades and decades ago, a lot of years. It is a big part of an aspect of my social life. I have great pals, and when I first joined the band, I was one of the youngest guys. Now myself and another pal are the oldest. But I have friends, you know, social friends my kids' age who will call me up from the, you know, they're in the pipe band. They'll call me up and say, hey, we're going to be playing down here on Friday night. Come on down, man. We'll have a lot of fun. And it's really interesting to, I'm a big fan of multi-generational friendships. And it's really fun doing stuff with these guys. And I meet sometimes their wives, you know, if they've gotten married, or, you know, girlfriends that they're still dating. And you don't have to do the dad thing. You can, you know, and you can, they're still doing the same goofy stuff, and once in a while they give some advice that maybe this isn't a good idea, but it's really fun, and just a great bunch of pals, and we've got, it's largely guys in the band, a few women, they're good friends too, and I think we total about 25 people. The band's been in existence for 50 years, this is our 50th anniversary this year.
Wow, and you had a big experience. You were playing in Men in Black 3. You're almost famous for that.
Oh, well, we were. We ended up on the cutting room floor at the last minute. Yeah, fame is so fleeting, and it just, yeah, more is the pity. But that would have been great. We have, I think, I might be wrong on this. If it's not the best, it's in the top five. We have the hottest selling bagpipe album in the world.
Wow.
And, who knew? A band from St. Paul, Minnesota. Long running. We get checks from iTunes from around the world. iTunes Japan, iTunes, you know, Australia, all this stuff. Only for the Irish tunes we play, and then Amazing Grace and a couple of others.
Are you on YouTube? Could we find you on YouTube?
Yeah, there's some. The band would be out there under that, and they've got a website and everything.
We want to see you. No, we have to see you.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you know what, Mike? I've been getting messages now on Facebook from many of your female fans, and they want to know this question: do you wear a kilt?
Oh, I have so many answers. Yes, we have answers. Yes, I wear a kilt. It's called saffron. Is the color? The band was set up or established by Irish immigrants 50 years ago, and they modeled it on the Irish Army uniform. So if you know the color saffron, it's sort of a brownish tan, and there's no plaid or anything. It's a solid color, and then we have black tunics or in the hot weather a white shirt. But if anyone saw the Liam Neeson movie, Michael Collins?
Mm-hmm.
That starts with a button after the 1916 revolution Easter Rebellion, and it focuses on this button on these guys' uniforms and then comes back. And there's two or three of these buttons in I've seen them in museums in Ireland when I'm over there, and the thing is very distinctive. And what happened was when the guys started the band, one of them had a brother who worked for the Quartermaster Corps in the Irish Army, which is like quartermasters all over the world. They have a tendency to hang on to things. And so they're walking through this warehouse, and here's literally a coffee can full of these brass buttons. And he says, "What are those?" And his brother says, "They're from 1916, they were called the Irish Volunteers then." And he says, "You want them?" And our guy says, it was Emmett, his guy's name was Emmett McCarthy. He says, "Yeah, I'll take them." So we have this coffee can full of these buttons, and we've actually donated some of them to the museums back in Ireland because we got them all. So everyone who's in the band gets issued with one of those buttons for their uniform. That's a lot of fun.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah,
I want to turn the corner here and take you back to another one of my favorite books. One that I really liked was Merlot, and I blogged it on Authors on the Air, and my title is I Laughed Out Loud. It's the kind of thing where you're sitting in public just trying to read a book, and all of a sudden this big belly laugh comes from nowhere. But could you talk a little bit about that book? Because I just found the humor in there was just cracking me up.
Well,
what did you like about Merlot?
Merlot is his real name is Anthony, and through an unfortunate experience a few years back, he is nicknamed Merlot, like the wine, and he's a bar restaurant owner, and he's owes a good deal of money to not the nicest guy in town, and he's got to find a way to repay this. And it kind of goes on from there. There's a couple of villains in there. Mr. Osborne, and of course then his friend Milton, who's his enforcer. And then there's three brothers who sort of show up out of nowhere, Mendel Lucerne and Elvis Ditchler. And they all sort of come together at the end. I don't know. What do you think? Does Merlot, it kept you riveted?
Oh, and he's one of those guys who, again, he's a likable guy, but then he decides to rob a bank. And what does he do? He falls in love with the bank teller. So you've got that whole scenario going on. You know, if you're going to rob a bank, fall in love with the bank teller before you rob it. And then you have a character, Otto. So he's the king of the deep-fried bacon on a stick. And he has all these, I think that's where I was laughing out loud, his Walter Mitty kind of fantasies. He decides he's going to marry the bank teller so she can go home and do his laundry. But, of course, he hasn't told her yet. So some outrageous characters. I think it's your outrageous characters and your wild and crazy plotting. It just, they're suspenseful, Mike. But that's
I don't know. Don't you know that? Have you ever run into anyone with a thought process like Otto? I have. He's just kind of like, I don't know, doing your laundry. What's in it for her? And he's thinking, well, she gets to do my laundry. What are you talking about?
Well, sure, and she gets to have all the deep-fried bacon that she wants.
When she's done doing the laundry, she can come over and work at his state fair stand for 16 hours a day.
Has been described
and in order to entice her, he's going to cut her a half-price deal on a treat. I mean, gee, thanks a lot.
Didn't he for a ticket to the fair, too, or was it only a half-price ticket? I don't know. But, yeah, it didn't work out. I was saying, Mike, your work has been compared to Elmer Leonard, Carl Hyacin, and Robert B. Parker. And I'm going to throw another one in. I think Janet Ivanovich. So many of the women are fans of hers, but she has that same kind of kooky character and the kind that the belly laughs surprise you. All of a sudden she'll do something outrageous where you have to, like, scream and laugh out loud. So I'm putting her in the mix. But really, I think you have your own style with your twists. Your plots are incredible. And how you weave them together. So you're styling to yourself. Tell us about your latest book that we can be looking forward to.
Well, one just came out now. In fact, it's not even officially released, although it is available on Amazon. It's called Bite Me. It's a Dev Haskell novel. And this will be number 3. I've actually got number 4 set to come out. That'll be coming out in August. But this one, Bite Me, I should add, too, they can be read in any order. They don't have to be read, first, second, third.
That's great.
Yeah, that always sort of bothered me when I tapped into something and suddenly you're clearly missing something that happened in book 3 and I'm in book 5. So that's not the situation here. In Bite Me, Dev Haskell... Is finds himself he just completely misreads the situation, and then after ending up with a woman who, he probably shouldn't be with, and then in case her reaction isn't strong enough, he, gets in even more trouble with her. But he ends up having to supply security, if you will, for some people who don't need it, and so he thinks. And so he's on this cakewalk job, as he views it. And from there, things go steadily downhill, and he finds himself involved and under the microscope with the local police, and things are piling up and really not going his way. Vintage Dev. And in case that isn't bad enough, he starts to read the situations wrong, and goes right down the tank from there.
And he has a tendency to do that. Just when things can't get any worse, he can kind of take it another level.
Again, don't you know some people like that? And you just want to, maybe you have. You just sit them down and say, I'm going to just explain what happened. Are you stopping when we get to the point where this was a good idea? And you never reach that point.
Do you think he has grown at any since you started when you invented him?
No, he's still very lovable, and like I say, you wouldn't want him dating your sister. No, he's going to develop on occasion maybe a bit of a temper, but not too much. I mean, one of the reasons I wrote not only the Dev Haskell series, but really the other books too, is, and I enjoyed reading this sort of thing for entertainment, but I really got tired of the idea of sort of an ex-special forces guy who just wants to be left alone, continue having a small organic farm where he and his trust fund wife, who's gorgeous, live. But someone does something and he doesn't want to be pushed, but now he's coming back with a vengeance. And just come on, get real. I forget what one I read, and it was a great story until the guy literally took like a kite and landed on the roof of the White House. And, you know, it's kind of like watching Tom Cruise, and he sort of really believes he does all these things. And no, Tom, it's just a movie.
And your guys are so believable, but yet they do the weirdest things. But then if you start to think about it, well, that happens in life a lot of times, too. We wind up doing some pretty crazy things.
On occasion, Dev has, operated with his feet on both sides of the law. He has made not some of the wisest choices and on occasion gotten away with it. He's purchased an automobile that was clearly hot. No questions asked type of thing, and he doesn't ask questions. He's come across, he and my other characters have come across some funds that really they weren't entitled to, but that didn't stop them from helping themselves.
That's right. Yet, slow, quick. We got a whole bunch of funds.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Let me ask you about. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you with Bite Me. That's the latest one that's out right now, but you're going to be releasing a new one on Bombshell in August. Is that correct?
Bombshell's another Dev Haskell tale.
Oh, great.
It has him involved with some roller derby gals. And one of the things I had to do as I got into it, you know, they have all these great names in roller derby, not only the team names, but the team players' names. And one of the things I had to do was go online, and there's actually a roller derby registration site where they register the names. And I sent those to them and made sure that they were clear and not taken. And in one instance, actually one of the names I had wanted to use was taken, so I backed off that. But that was kind of interesting. And I met a couple of local women who participated in the roller derby, and if you're not involved with it, your first blush is sort of that stuff that used to be on TV, and you're thinking, oh man, you know, a bunch of hard charging women. You know, these gals actually do a lot of fundraising and stuff for local charities and schools and things. It's really a neat deal. And that it was fun to get to know them. And then I had a lot of fun writing the tale Bombshell around it. And the team that Dev is initially involved in is the Bombshells. And he's to, again, provide some security for someone who really doesn't need it. And, of course, things quickly get out of hand.
And I imagine he has a love interest somewhere in there.
He's got a couple.
That's our man.
One of which doesn't work so well. And then, just in case there's a dull moment, Heidi washes up on shore again. She goes through men like a chainsaw, and then sort of swears off all men, and then works her way back. Has a quick tryst for a weekend or a week with Dev, and then decides, you know, she can do better, and you know, find some other guy who's going to you know, not add up. So, but yeah, that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed Bombshell.
We'll look forward to
that. It's going to be fun to get out there.
Yeah. I want to turn the course a little bit, and I just understand you just had an anniversary.
I did, yeah.
How many years?
That's number four.
And you have an interesting relationship with your wife geographically.
Yeah, well, I have an interesting relationship with her anyway.
That's why I threw the
geographical. Who wouldn't want to be married to me, Ann? I mean, you know, come on. No, she's a great gal. She is Irish, lives in Ireland. I live in St. Paul, and we go back and forth. So during the course of a year, I spend about 6 months in Ireland. I try and dodge the Minnesota winters. So roughly from the first of the year till maybe May, I'm over there. She's back here in the summer. She's doing back in Minnesota now in about 2 weeks. She'll be here for about July and into August, complaining about our heat and humidity. But I met her about 10 years ago. We dated for 6-7 years, and then we just had our fourth anniversary. So.
And you were saying, too, that Ireland is a wonderful place for you to write, and I think many writers will understand that because of the distractions. Do you want to show your writing style? Because I'm sure wannabe authors, too, want to know how you write so prolifically. So what's your style when you write, and why is Ireland a great place for you to be for writing?
Well, it's simply put, it's a great place. My wife has a good calming factor on me. She's good to me and good for me, and I mean that sincerely. She really is. That's number one. Number two is my social life over there is largely through her and her acquaintances, who are also friends, but you know, through her. And so no one calls me during the day. So I am up usually at 6:30 in the morning. I will start reviewing what I wrote the day before. I read it out loud. I do some editing, and I hopefully have done 10 pages. And at the end of reading and editing, I'm sort of in a mindset to let's get going. And I start tapping keys, and I stop at 4 or 5 o'clock. I take maybe a 20-minute break for lunch. I maybe occasionally get up and get a glass of water or something, but otherwise I'm at the keyboard tapping keys. There's no romance to it. It's what I do. And things just sort of come to me. You're thinking about stuff. My wife and I are great walkers. She's one of these women who, if she feels herself putting on an ounce of weight the next morning, I'm eating dry toast for breakfast, if that translates. And so she's, you know, good for me. I mean, she's getting me out there and walking, but you know, oftentimes I'm sort of pondering what my next move is in the writing. And she'll say, "You're awfully quiet. What's going on?" And I'll say, "What's going on? I've got a guy hanging out a window by a phone cord, and he's tied to an office chair with his hands taped to the arms, or, you know, some crazy thing like that." And you know, the next thing I know, she's picking up the pace and getting away from me. But it works. It's strictly concentration and focus. And, you know, it's really tough if you've got, you know, outside interferences and family or job requirements that demand your attention and obviously would take a priority, and you have little kids running around. Boy, that is really tough to function. And some people can. I'm not really one of them. And that's one of the reasons I start early in the morning. I've always been an early riser. Now I'm usually up at 5:30, and you know, the coffee's on, and I'm at the keyboard doing writing. I just have to do it, not a monk's life, but darn close to it.
Do you write every day?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. Okay. Absolutely. Sometimes you go back and you think, what was I thinking here? But I don't want to say I don't believe in writer's block. I mean, I think people experience that. But my experience along with that is The only way to overcome it is to sit there at the keyboard and keep tapping keys. And if you don't like it, that's what the delete button's for. Yeah. But I'd wait a day, you know, and once in a while you see it and it's not the first time I've gone through things and suddenly you think, you know, I've put 2 pages of effort into working up to this joke and it's not that funny. So let's just delete the whole thing. Yeah. Or you go through it and just things are sort of topsy-turvy and you move a scene from maybe midway in the book to earlier on. I really, really work at trying to catch someone in that first sentence. I think that's so important. I forget who I was reading about the other day, but one of the great opening lines in a book, and it was something along the lines of, and at noon on the third day, the last camel died. And, you know, it's about these people stuck in the desert. And you're thinking, my God, you just think of all the scenarios you can come up with like that. And I'm trying to open with a lot of scenes like that. Mr. Softy starts out like that. Page one, sentence one, Dev is at Mr. Softy's side in the hospital, and the guy's yelling at him. And you're kind of wondering what is with this character, and you read on to find out.
Yeah, Mr. Softy has an interesting plot. We have dueling ice cream companies with a little bit more than ice cream. Yeah. Oh, are you still there?
Anne, if you can hear me, I can't hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now? Okay, so we have got a technical problem. I don't know if anybody can hear me, but this would probably be a good time to bring the show in for landing. We have really enjoyed this time, and it's been wild and crazy, just like Mike's books. So I think Mike can still hear us, but I don't think we can hear each other. So I am going to go ahead and bring our show in for landing. Thank everybody for joining us. Apologize for the thunderstorms, and now you can hear all of my dogs barking. So it is now a wild and crazy time in Southwest Florida. But I highly recommend, if you have not read anything by Mike Farisee, today's the day. It's going to be a weekend for you. Go grab 1, 2, 9, 10 of his books. The 10th would be Bombshell. And just enjoy the heck out of the weekend. The plots, the characters, the twists and turns. And we want to say to our co-host, Pam Stack, thank you for being with us on Facebook and messaging us. And I hope you feel better. Next week, we are going to have J.D. Rhodes with us. So that will be another show that I think you're going to like. And coming up, we're going to have Leland Dirks. And I say that because it's one show where all of my barking dogs do not make a difference. Florida is a very dry state. We rarely have thunderstorms, so I apologize for the storms in the air and the interference on this program. Thank you for being with Authors on the Air. Thank you, Mike Farisee, for joining us. It's been great. Have a good weekend. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.